Item 7.2, member financial report, Mr. Stahl.
In your packet, you'll find the financial report. And hit a couple of high points in the general fund. Revenues exceed expenditures by more than $250,000. That's right side up. That's a good thing. I will skip all of the detailed expenditures here today. They're in there for your review. And I would mention that the checking account fund balances at the end of April in the general fund was $355,735.87. And the utility fund is $44,887.67. Our community development block grant money, we're very close to closing out all of those grants that we've done. We put about $1,500 of seed money into that account to open it, but now several years ago. At the end of April, it has $1,148.58, largely diminished as a result of banking fees. I'll be happy if at the end of the program we have $1,000 in there, which will then go back to the general fund. Our text pool is one of our investments. Governmental pool we participate in, and at the end of April, the balance of text pool was $745,860.87. We also have four certificates of deposit that have a value, a maturity value of $255,852. I would report to you this evening that we have collected 105% of the budgeted tax revenue. At the end of April, our adjusted roll value was $102,550,987. And our year-to-date collections, including delinquent taxes, is $837,298.94. On sales tax. Our general sales tax revenue for April was $6,066.05, and for our road maintenance sales tax is $1,516.51. That is 14% ahead of where we were for the same month last year. And that is the financial report.
Thank you, David. Any questions from council? No questions. We'll move on to item 8.0, business. Moving on to 8.1, presentation acceptance of fiscal year 2013-2014 annual fiscal audit report from Taylor Brown and Hill. Before you start, to go over something, I want to clarify something. Earlier, we had a question that says it's coming for a can't review, or maybe we cannot speak. Mr. Stanton had a question on the sort of two-part or one question, but basically two asking for two different people, yourself and our city attorney. The audit committee, my understanding, the way we've got it set up is we have 45 days, I believe, afterwards for our audit committee to review the audit that you're performing or giving us tonight. If there is any discrepancies or questions, they can go back and we can calculate to fix that problem. Is that correct? I mean, this is never a done deal, right? Tonight, this is not the done deal, per se. If there are questions to change something or look at something.
That is correct. I mean, the thing is that we haven't ever, there's been three audit committees since the thing started, and we've been to every one. There wasn't one called before this meeting, so I just assumed that did everything, it was ready to go. I mean, there's certain things we can change. We can change some wording and things like that, but as far as numbers, I mean, we're not going to issue it without the numbers being what they are.
Right. Well, we'll have more questions here. Council also have, I've got quite a few, but I'm going to let the council have the privilege first. Is that correct? As our city attorney, we have a 45-day window there?
Yes, that's accurate. That's accurate. And then also, I mean, just looking over the, sitting here reading the resolution, the committee is an advisory committee. The committee could come to council and give their recommendation. Council doesn't have to follow that. Council could follow that. But at the same time, you're talking about a certified public accountant that is that's when he's talking about the numbers, those can't change. I mean, whatever his findings are, they're going to be, and it's whether council accepts it. I mean, really, it's more of a accepting, you're not approving, you're accepting what they're presenting for.
And I think the times that we've met, it's been a lot of questions and a lot of just understanding of the audit process and things like that. And I think we've had some pretty good headway with those meetings, so I'm apologizing. People are happy with that.
I'm sure we're going to have one after we have to have a post, but I just wanted to touch base on that.
That's fine.
Before you start your presentation. Also, let it be noted that David actually did not refuse to give the committee the letter that was written today. Was actually me, so I'll take credit when credit's due, whether it's right or wrong. So I don't want David taking one slingshot as he usually gets a lot of times. That was all me. But that being said, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, City Council. My name is John Manning. I'm a partner with the Sale of Brandon Hill, and we're here to go over the results of the annual audit. If you look at page one in the actual audited financial statements. This is our independent audit report. This and the two reports that I'll talk about in the back are the only part of the audit that belongs to us. The financial statements and the notes are the responsibility of the city. Our responsibility is to express an opinion as to whether those numbers are materially correct as of September 30, 2014. And that's what this report is stating on pages 1 through 3. This used to be a two-page report. Now they've lengthened it to three pages. But it's what we refer to as an unmodified opinion, which means we did not have anything that came up during the audit that would require us to modify our opinion. For instance, if there was something on the general ledger that we could not ascertain if it was correct, or if there was a complex disclosure that we could not get enough backup for to express an opinion on, we would say everything is okay except for, and that except for paragraph is what we call a modification. You did not have any of that. And you would not be getting CDBG grants and the grants that y'all would have been getting in the past. You probably wouldn't have been getting those without the unmodified opinion. I mean, it's only three pages in here, but it's something that CDBG and the people that issue those funds look at, and a lot of people that use these financials look at. So although it's only three pages, this is really what we were out here to do, is to express this opinion, and that's what that opinion says. If you look at page four, this is the management's discussion and analysis. This is a written narrative of what happened during the year. It's the financial statements broken down. It's the only place in here anymore where they have complete numbers. And it's really a way for people that aren't accountants and can't really look at a balance sheet or income statement and tell 100% what's going on. This is a way to kind of work through what happened during the year. It tells people some of the highlights, what the balances are at the end of the year. So although it's not a very long document, it does show a lot of the things that happened during the year. And kind of let you see what happened this year versus last year. And that's some of the test work that we did, is looking at comparisons between this year and last year, making sure that those relationships are good and that we have backup to prove those. One thing on page 10, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is a statement of net position. This is the part of the audit where we actually include the capital assets and any long-term liabilities that the city has in the governmental activities. And the big change here was, and I don't remember exactly, Dave, you might have to refresh my memory, but Harris County did perform a large road project that actually, the road was turned over to the city. I can't remember.
Yeah, $2.1 million.
Yeah. So that you will see in these financials this year is a large increase in capital assets, and that was done because in these statements we do have to carry that as an asset because that does belong to the city. So we have to offset that with a revenue as they built it for you. So that's one of the big things that you'll see there. And really, if you look down in the liability section, the only difference here is the compensated absences for employees, their sick leave and their vacation time, that if they left, they get paid. That's the only liabilities of a long-term value that the city has. With that being said, I would like to discuss one thing that's going to change next year is a new GASB standard called 68. Where you will have to actually put in your unfunded pension liability only on this. What you do for TMRS is still going to stay generally the same. But if you will look at page, bear with me just for a second, page 33, I think we discussed this at the audit committee as well, that while a lot of cities are going to be putting in a liability, this city's actually overfunded, almost broke even, which is about as good as you can do. That means you haven't put too much into it, and you're not sitting there with a big unfunded liability to book. So, you know, I know that those things come up, and the way that the plan works, you can make that plan super expensive, or you can make that plan fit what the city can afford, and it looks like you're doing a really good job of making sure that that's what's going, that's what's happening. So next year, you might be going to some board retreats and some things like that where people talk about a large liability that's going to be put on. The city of Shore Acres is not going to be in that boat. So I just wanted to make sure that I pointed that out and discussed that there are only two kinds of, only one kind of long-term debt here that the city has. If you look at page 13, this is a general fund, and I think David went over this financial report. There's a fund balance of almost $900,000, which is essentially if you got rid of all of your assets and paid all of your liabilities, what's left. So it's a positive $900,000. Last year, your expenditures for the year in the general fund were almost $1.8. So you're looking at almost half a year of fund balance. And if you really want to look at if that fund balance is real, this has no capital assets or debt in here. So at the end of the year, the cash in those accounts had $361,000. There were $795,000 of text pool with $241,000 of liability. So although that's a big number and there's a lot of other things in there, there's a lot of cash and investment sitting there that this fund balance isn't, involved with other things besides cash. I mean, there's real balances there. It's not like it's something that you're waiting on to come in, like a big $4 million receivable that you're not sure you're going to get. The other thing is we had to change some of the terminology this year, and that deferred inflows, that did not, the numbers there did not change. We just had to present those differently this year. You can see where we moved property taxes, municipal court, and grants, those things that have been uncollected or deferred. We just moved those down to a new line item. So, with that, there was a planned drawdown of general fund balance, and looks like it came in better than what y'all had originally budgeted. So, if you look at page 14, there's that statement there. Page 16 is your statement of net position, which is your water sewer operation. And again, a lot more capital assets there is obviously the water system is very capital intensive, and that fund also changed the net position for a positive of almost $75,000 for the year. So with all those projects going on and things like that, being able to finish with a plus there is very good. If you look at page 19, start your notes to the financial statement. Very similar to the MD&A, it's written there that in order to have an audited set of financials, you have to do footnotes that are required by GAAP. And we feel that the footnotes here meet all the required elements there. Couple things towards the back. This year, as David mentioned, you're getting close to the end of the CDBG grant process. That and the new start of the Coastal Impact Assistance Program, the city had about $610,000 of federal awards that were spent this year. So with that, we had to do our audit under the Single Audit Act, which means we had to look at major programs in more detail and with OMB requirements. And we did not have any findings on those this year. I mean, the city staff does a real good job. I don't know how many of y'all have ever looked at those requirements, but they're pretty intense. And, trying to make sure that all that stuff is done and done properly. I know people up here spend a lot of time making sure that those things get done. They have outside audits from their guys have been done several times on these things, and we're required to review those, and we've never had any findings from them, too. So we feel pretty comfortable with our work in noting that there were no findings there. So kind of the whole thing in a nutshell. I don't want to take up a whole lot of your time. This is a 30 or 40-page document with a lot of accounting and things like that in here. But all in all, when we get here, the books are in good working order. And we get a lot of cooperation throughout the process, and I think that's one of the things that leads to us having an unmodified opinion and no findings. So we appreciate the help of the city.
All right. Do you have enough copies for us to give to our audit committee with you tonight?
Yeah,
you
yes, I've got those.
Okay, well, I'll let David handle that. I'm going to let the council ask questions first. I'm going to start to the right. Mr. Wheeler, do you have any questions?
No, I
have not.
John, could you describe your experience in conducting municipal financial audits?
We've been doing governmental audits at the Tilla Brown Hill for over 50 years. We currently do about 50 municipalities. We've done cities as small as the city of Somerville, and we do cities as large as the town of Flower Mound, which is about 70,000 people. We have four partners in our audit area, and that's all we do all year is governmental type engagements. We have a few non-for-profit engagements, but cities, school districts, counties, water districts, that's pretty much the bread and butter of the side of the firm that I'm on. I mean, we're a full-service accounting firm, but we have a staff of about anywhere from 20 to 25 people that do nothing but government audits 95% of the year.
You said you've performed our audit here several consecutive years, correct?
Yes. I believe this is the sixth year, and I believe David had mentioned something about trying to do proposals every five, but you got to remember the first year was the first year that the city had been required to have an audit.
Right.
So we had to do two in really a 1 year. So I think we did one and then just turned around and did the other. So it's really essentially been five operating cycles.
Of the five operating cycles, how many of those years have you personally been involved?
I've been involved with four. The first one, the initial one actually, when we were contacted about doing it, another partner handled that, and it just fit better in our work schedule for me to handle that job. I have family here, so coming to Houston is, you know, it's a long drive for a lot of people, but I get something else out of that. So that's why we kind of rotated it out. I've done tons of cities, so it just kind of fit.
A little wet today.
a little wet, yes. Last night.
Since you've been doing the audit for 4 years consecutive, right?
Yes.
Isn't it true that the assets have grown significantly and in fact, or historically high?
Yes, and I can't speak. I don't think there were any audit reports before 4 years ago, but yes. And a bulk of that, a lot of that came with the grant programs that came after the hurricane. I mean, you're really turning around and putting several million dollars of capital assets on the books through somebody's money besides the city. And when you do that, you know, those net assets grow. And also, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, you can see that your fund balance is predominantly made up of extremely liquid cash accounts, not something that's not real or something that, you know, man, we don't get this, that net asset number's not real. It is, and it has gone up progressively throughout the year. And some of that's because of capital assets, and I think some of that is because of conservative budgeting and the attention that you guys as the council and the administration take to make sure that number is in a safe area.
So, given your experience of doing Shore Acres fiscal management, would you say there was anything that I need to be concerned about?
No, I mean, here's the deal. You know, an audit, if you read our opinion letter, says we can offer limited assurance, and I know people are like, oh, what does that mean? We can't look at every transaction that the city has. We cannot look at all the outside dealings that the city has. I mean, we can only do what we're required to do. So we do look at a lot of the material transactions, and we look at a lot of the things like salary, a lot of the grants, things that, you know, not necessarily from a fraud standpoint, but from a government oversight standpoint, we have to look at those a lot. But we also, you know, we do a lot of things in the fraud arena. I mean, we do go in and we do look at internal controls. We do talk to different areas that take in money and make sure that those things are functioning in a way that we feel comfortable with.
So financial stability of the city is good.
I think it's very good.
During the audit, did you find anything that would indicate $90,000 missing or anything?
No. And like I said, I don't look at every transaction, but when you go through here, you know, if you plan to draw down general fund balance and it's drawn down less than what you budgeted, you know, just from a looking at the number standpoint, it would be hard to even look at this and go, well, there was a $90,000 discrepancy.
So, no red flags, no unanswered questions that would suggest that we need a forensic audit. And for those that may not know what a forensic audit is, Investopedia.com defines it as an examination and evaluation of a firm's or individual's financial information for use as evidence in court. A forensic audit can be conducted in order to prosecute a party for fraud, embezzlement, or other financial claims. Is there anything, red flags or unanswered questions, that could suggest we need a forensic audit?
We did not see anything that would require a forensic audit.
Thank you.
Mr. Moyer, do you have any questions?
I was just curious.
the city seems to have a lot of, what I'll say, cash reserves that are available in various, in several instruments. And do you find, in your finding and your experience in local government, do you find that City of Short Acres has an abundance of reserves, is short of reserves, or is typical for a city of this size?
I would say it's probably a little bit higher than cities of this size. But I don't look at this and go, I mean, fund balance is all a matter of perspective. It's what you want it to be. I mean, I've seen places that, I think I mentioned the audit committee, we have a school district that had a bond election 30 years ago, and the bond election split the town. So they never reconciled, so they can never issue debt. So in order to do any kind of capital activity, they have to build up their fund balance to a level that looks, you know, what are you doing with $10 million in your general fund balance? But once you understand what they're trying to do, it makes more sense. And I don't see anything here that people are trying to make fund balance higher than it needs to be for the sake of doing that. I mean, I think, you know, in light of what's been going on with the changes in sales tax, I mean, your property values got wiped away. You know, y'all had a lot of things happen here. And, I'll never say you have enough, you know, too much fund balance. But I also look at, you know, the $9 million and you have $2 million worth of expenditures. I mean, there's a point where it gets a little egregious. But I think GFOA, who does nothing but municipal government reporting, usually suggests at a minimum of 3.5 months. So you're, you know, closer to 6. So it's not like you're at 15 or 20 months.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Alderman Snell.
I have a couple of questions about findings. And I think 3 years ago in 2012, I think we had 3 findings. And then last year, just the 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, 0.
Yes, sir.
And so just to clarify, I think that's good. Definitely a step in the right direction.
Yes,
ma'am. As far as the one finding we had last year, it was about the year-end accruals. Nothing was made so that we weren't balancing. And so that was indeed a lot of stuff to go through in a few little minutes. So that was indeed rectified so that we are now balancing.
Yes, ma'am. And the only thing that we're really working on as far as journal entries is the grants. And that is because those are extremely delicate, and most of those grant entries really only affect the government wise, which aren't really kept on your books. They're the same set of books that you have where we just add capital assets and debt.
Okay.
So yes, ma'am. I mean, when we started, they never done the audit process, so we had to have a lot of findings. That wasn't because of lack of knowledge. It was just we'd never done this before, and working with them and you know what David and his staff have done, they've really done a better job of getting those things done. Yes, ma'am.
We greatly appreciate your time. You have a good evening.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item 8.2, consideration approval of invoices. If the council has had time, I'm going to get a motion.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Do you have a second?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bunker, you got a second on that? Any questions? All those in favor?
All right.
Yes? Yes, sir. Move on to item 8.3. Discussion of city actions in response to an open records request made by Kim Sanford on April 23, 2015. This was put back as a discussion on the agenda because there was a question raised, multiple questions, however, about the Open Meeting Act, Public Information Act, HIPAA law, and things of this nature. At the last meeting, I did have a city attorney present. I think it went a little further than what I thought it would go. But for tonight, I've asked our city attorney, to come up and speak a little bit about the city's responsibility, what we have released, what we haven't released, to make sure that we're all within the same guidelines of the law. With that said, I'm going to let our attorney step up and answer those questions. Thank you.
Chris Gregg, partner with Gregg & Gregg, D.C., city attorney's office. First, just generally, first, when an open records request comes in, the basic process is it's filed with the city secretary's office, has to be in writing so that everyone knows exactly what's being requested. You start with the general principle that any document filed in a government is a public document. However, the legislature has come out with specific statutory basis of how certain documents either can be withheld or redacted. In this specific instance, specifically with Kim Sanford, it originated with one request, and that request was rather voluminous how it was worded. We asked Ms. Sanford to, in essence, modify it, and she agreed. She modified it for a 7-year period, and that's what's attached in your packet, and that's attached to the brief. What happens is we then get the documents from David, and we try, you know, we review the documents to see, okay, are there any of these documents that do need to be objected to? If any of them do need to be objected to, the city attorney's office sends a written brief to the attorney general's office. The attorney general's office is the, they call the balls and strikes for any government on an open records request, if it's objected to. There are many times open records requests come in and David doesn't even call me because, okay, someone wants a copy of the ordinance or something that's obviously public that we're not going to, you don't even need the city attorney to say, you know, do we need to release this or not? It's public. But in this instance, we actually did file a brief, and it's in your packet, and I think everyone has read it. And what we did was we raised, with regard to the 5 different reports that were given by the city of Shore Acres to our office, we wrote the brief. And let me say, with regard to the last meeting, where event reports were actually given to you, very important to realize, those were not City of Shore Acre reports. Those are City of LaPorte reports. There is a contract with the City of Shore Acres and the City of LaPorte where City of Shore Acres pays a monthly fee. City of LaPorte provides 911 calls and other various reports. Specifically in this instance, what happened is Ms. Sanford went to City of LaPorte and filed a similar request. We didn't know that. How would we know it? Our firm doesn't represent the city of LaPorte. Have no ability to tell that city, yes, you need to object, no, you don't. They release those documents. So the documents that were provided to you at the last council meeting where I was in attendance, those were city of LaPorte reports. But just so there's no confusion, had nothing to do with city work. Now, so the 5 reports that were provided to our firm of City of Shore Acres, we're waiting for the Attorney General to make a decision. We made objections to those 5 reports, thought that was the right thing to do. You can, if you read the report, another thing just so everyone understands, when we do a brief to the Attorney General, by law, I have to give a copy of that brief to the requester. Not the documents, but the brief that says to the AG, why are you doing this? What is your basis to do it? And we have laid out in the report the basis upon which we think those documents should not be produced because they're confidential or because of HIPAA laws or the Medical Practice Act. Those are bases that a city can object. So just so there's no confusion, those were objected to so that they did not have to be released. And once again, that's up to the Attorney General to decide. They will write back. But when you do that, you have to give, like my brief lays out, you have to give what's called a causal connection. You've got to give a connection in your argument as to, okay, here are these set of facts, here are these documents, and this is why we argue this statute applies. You can't just say, we object all reports on medical practice. They're just going to, I know what they're going to say. They're going to reply with, well, you didn't give enough information to say how they're connected. How is it a medical document? So that was one of many bases that are in the report, all statutorily protected. And I'm still waiting. Usually it's around 90 days from the day we submit our brief. We filed it on May 1st. So usually within 90 days we get a response. When we get the response, the Attorney General issues a written opinion and tells us what to do. Yes, you can withhold. Yes, you can redact certain elements of the report. No, we don't agree with you. You need to give it to the requester. I mean, that's how the basic process goes. And what I mean, the other reason why I was here tonight is really to answer any questions if anyone had a specific question as to
either this one or open records requests in general.
Mike, any questions?